Greetings, Slidell. This is Bob Rouse, your host of the Grace Radio series, Voices. This adventure and programming for Grace Radio focuses on the voices of our neighbors in Slidell and the surrounding area about matters of community interest. Our guests today are two gentlemen, Mr. Ed Lewis and Mr. Jeffrey Marshall. Both of these gentlemen are involved with a project called the Nora Project here just north of Covington. We were kind of interested when we saw their brochure and wanted to know more about it. So I say, welcome, gentlemen. Glad you're here.
Thank you.
Ed Lewis, you're the CEO. You're the president of this. You're obviously a veteran and a man who has dedicated himself to helping others. Tell us a little bit about this Camp Nora and what it might be intended to do.
Thank you for having us. Camp Nora. NORA stands for No One Rides Alone. It is an organization that, or a project that has come out of the organization, Ride the Brotherhood. For those in the motorcycle riding industry, I'd like to say, though a lot of people know me as Cowboy. That's my road name. So when they listen to this show, they'll know who's talking.
All right, Cowboy.
We developed this project where we can assist the homeless veterans population in both St. Tammany and Washington Parish. I have a strong belief that a veteran or any homeless person really isn't looking for a handout but a hand up.
Okay.
And we like to feel that way towards our veterans. I'm always telling people to keep something in mind. A veteran took an oath to defend his country, fight for his country, even die for his country, but not to be forgotten by his country. And
I feel
the veterans are the forgotten of our country right now, to where they're not getting the assistance, the help. Any given night, we have over 50,000 veterans that are homeless across the United States.
Are you talking about people sleeping on the streets, 50,000 people?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
Veterans that don't have a secure place to live, not really knowing where their next meal's coming from. It's shameful, in my opinion, that a country as strong as the United States that does so much to be the big brother to the rest of the world cannot be big brother to those who serve this country to make it the big brother.
Well, help me with this. Paint the picture for me, if you will. A man or a woman goes into some years of service, 4, 8, I'm not sure what the terms of commitment might be ultimately, but they serve their country for a while, and they come back, and why don't they just, I'm going to ask this facetiously because I think I might know the answer, but why don't these people just get a job and buy a house and settle down and put life back together again? What's the issue?
The key word that I use is structure. A lot of your veterans, when they went into the military, they are introduced to a new way of life. As a drill instructor, one of my jobs was to take a new recruit, bring them down to a point where we can rebuild them back up with a frame of mind to follow orders, to always have their fellow soldiers back, to know how to respond when things are called upon them, but also teach them common sense and the proper decision-making techniques. When a lot of veterans came home and were released back into the civilian world, the frustration because that structure wasn't there anymore. Myself, when I got out originally in 75, when I landed in San Francisco when I came back from overseas, and they bused us to the airport from Travis Air Force Base to San Francisco International, we weren't met by the friendliest type of greetings. We had different items thrown at us. We were called names. That set very uncomfortable in a lot of soldiers' minds. That speaks of the Vietnam era. To me, the present era is these veterans are being faced with unusual requirements. They're being brought into a sandbox where there's no guarantee that they're going to be able to come home. They're being brought over to an area where training may not have fully prepared them. And now when they come home, they're put back into an atmosphere where they don't have to make those life decisions, but they go into the civilian world to where the decisions, the guidance, the structure isn't there, and they start hopping around from job to job, or they start feeling a sense of lacking because they can't provide.
Do you think it might be a lack of another human being who understands? I mean, you know, we all need people in our life. We all need a support group. We all need people that we can talk to who understand us and are willing to, like you said a few minutes ago, have your back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all need that. And suddenly having lived in that environment for a number of years, come back and are we saying that there's nobody that has their back?
There's organizations out there, various military-related organizations, the VFW, American Legion, Combat Vets Association, Patriot Riders. These are organizations that are there, but our veterans that are coming back don't know where to turn. They haven't had that transitional period to where they can look at what they can do. I'll give you a good example real quick. This was brought to my attention. When a guard unit that has been deployed, they come home, they have to process through a military base. The personnel individual stand up there and tell the group, if you have any kind of issues, you stand over here. If you don't have any issues, you stand over here. The group with the issues are going to stay on base for another 6 or 8 months. Those who don't get to go home. What's the choice? These young men and ladies are going to want to go home because they've been away from home.
Absolutely.
So the transition, explanation, guidance, recommendations aren't there.
I understand what you're saying, the urgency to get out. I've been in the soup long enough. I want to get out into the urgency to get out, the urgency to get back to what they perceive to be a normal life.
Mm-hmm.
Is there. So they come back. How does that finally end up in homelessness?
I can only speak for myself.
Okay.
I got out originally in 75. I got married. In a 10-year time or 13-year time period, I had 10 different jobs. Could not make that adjustment to the civilian world. The guidance, the leadership that I was used to wasn't there. It was more so about the almighty dollar, not for the betterment of the individuals. The decisions and the guidance that I saw from upper supervision and management levels were extremely questionable. I was told I asked too many questions and challenged too many people. I was married with two kids and found myself homeless.
Mm-mm.
And
so you have a personal burden for this. I mean, you understand it firsthand. It's not something you read in a textbook or you saw a movie or heard a radio interview. This was life for you.
It's something that I'm not proud of. To see your two children being bathed in a sink or cooking over a sterno. Luckily, it was only for a short period of time. Up until now, it's something I've always buried inside of me.
Hmm.
I'm being upfront with it because I want people out there to know this is a serious issue, and it affects more than just a veteran in a lot of cases.
And this just wasn't something that happened to you. This is repeated over and over again. Also with us this morning is Jeff Marshall. Jeff is the chairman of this program, putting it all together. And you're not a veteran, are you?
No, Bob, I'm not, and I certainly want to take a moment to appreciate the opportunity to speak today. It's interesting that in my particular story, I think I fell into the traps that many of us did and just benefiting from the service of our men and women who chose to make sacrifices on our behalf. And it wasn't until really 9/11 that a lot of us started to kind of rekindle our patriotism to where we started to appreciate the significance and the special nature of our country. I think we'd been kind of lulled into sleep with respect to an ongoing long period of prosperity ever since the end of World War II particularly. I didn't fully grasp the importance of being an American and being a patriot. And I think that hit home with me significantly. Really through the process, I was one of many who was quick to shake a serviceman's or woman's hand and thank them for their service. If I saw two people in uniform, I might pick up the tab and not tell them, but you know, have the waitress bring the tab over to me. And I think, you know, I felt good about that, but it really felt like a lot of that was making me feel good about me and not so much really addressing an issue. And I think what really became clearer to me, and I would never discourage anybody from doing either of those things I just mentioned, but it became clear to me that that wasn't nearly enough, that it was time for me to take a stand for these men and women. Obviously, I don't have the specific experience that Ed has. I can empathize to a certain degree, but I can't truly understand fully those challenges other than being able to listen to Ed's story and others like Ed who've shared with me the challenges that have been faced. And when I met Ed a couple of years ago, actually as a car hobbyist, ran into Ed, it became very clear to me that I was put in front of Ed for something greater than what I could necessarily understand. And as our relationship started to build and I started to understand and listen and truly come to grips with the challenges that these men and women face as veterans who are put back into society in a very difficult set of circumstances, it dawned on me that there was a purpose in my life that was bigger than me taking care of my financial needs as an individual, bigger than me, period. It was time to really reach out and become involved in something. And I've become very passionate about it. It's been very easy. You just heard Ed speaking. It's clear to understand that somebody has the courage to take that change in their life and have a vision to move something forward that's this important. I wanted to be a part of that. I wanted to help Ed make a difference, to deliver this opportunity to make a difference in the lives of men and women. And what really appealed to me most about the Camp Nora aspect of what we're doing was the fact that this is a transitional time for these people, that we can make a difference. And in my Christian walk, touching a life, one life, has a benefit to hundreds of people. And if we can turn a single veteran from homelessness into a productive member of society, then we've created a tremendous benefit for them as well as a whole lot of people.
Well, both of you have painted an excellent picture for us. Ed, you've shown us what it's like for that to be a part of your life. And probably more of us who are listening would relate to you, Jeff, because maybe we haven't been there before. But we as human beings see the need, see what needs to be done personally. This is not somebody else's problem. This is not one of those things that we say, like, we're looking for somebody else to solve the problem.
Right. Couldn't agree with you more. That's really the challenge and the opportunity. We have something laying at our doorstep that gives an opportunity to reach out and make a difference with young men and women, or men and women in period, that deserve our attention. We have a chance to minister to people in our own backyard. These needs exist in St. Tammany and Washington Parish, not thousands of miles away. There are people that we'll walk out and run into in a store or pass on the street that need us, and we can make a difference.
This is a pretty complex issue. There's probably more than one phase of this issue that we need to address. Does Camp Noor address this as come in for 30 days and you're healed and you're back out? Or exactly what goes on? What are the phases?
Well, I think the key is, and I think transitional is the key word here, each veteran who's brought to Camp Nora will be evaluated for their particular circumstances. In the counseling process, an ISP, which is an individual service plan, will be established for each new resident. And in the process, each one will bring different levels of stress in their life, different needs specifically, and we'll work with them to identify what will probably be at least a 6-month stay, through as many as 24 months, with the idea being and the emphasis being on transitioning these people, providing an opportunity to train them towards a sustainable life past, and removing them from the vicious cycle of homelessness, identifying their skill set that they bring to the table, and then identifying where we can point them to and work with them to get them vocational training and educational training, to identify the particular skills that they have and capitalize on those. We're working with employers who have been willing to commit that they will hire veterans when we reach certain stages. We have several employers that have been committed to doing that. Will give us a place to put these gentlemen and ladies to work. Will also give us an opportunity to help them kind of get a foundation to where, when they leave, when they've completed their program, that we're not just turning them back onto the streets, but we're plugging them into an employment situation, even a housing situation, where we're going to work with them. And Ed's going to create some, or give you some more specifics about that exact plan. But the key being that I think the whole focus from my perspective is identifying that it's a opportunity to transition lives, to take and break this cycle, kind of start and hit a reset button and enable these people to, through the support. And all of us need support. If their support system isn't in place, we can provide that support system that we're, most of us benefit from our families and people we know in community. This gives us an opportunity to kind of re-engage these folks to where they get the system of support that maybe isn't available them traditionally to them through their family members.
So it takes us back to where the veteran is. They came from, as Ed explained to us, they came from a system of structure. They came from a system of this is the next thing in life. And for some years, they followed this. So when they come to Camp Nora, we begin with medical evaluations, psychological evaluations, creating their individual ISP, and provide immediate structure. But it sounds like, if I'm hearing you right, that over the next 6 to 24 months, we begin to transition them out of the structure of go see the doctor, talk to the counselor, do an ISP. We transition them out of that beginning into a place where they can make their own decisions.
Absolutely.
Where they can evaluate the good and the bad and know what's right for themselves and for their family.
Absolutely. That's not, again, it's not, as we make the point, and rather not to be trite with it, but that this is a situation where we're giving them that hand up. We're helping them, and we're supplementing what they bring to the table when they show up to prepare them to be functioning, prosperous individuals in the community after the fact. And I think the things that we can help them do is the stuff that, again, I benefited from a very strong family that supported me every step of the way, and I often needed them. In fact, I still need them. And so we're providing not necessarily a biological family, certainly, but we're providing them with the support that enables them to start making better decisions going forward and reconnecting. And through employment and through interacting with other veterans, they'll understand that there's a community that is there for them that they can be a part of that leads them to the ability to get out and have an apartment, a place to live on their own, to hold a job, to get away from substance abuse that often lead, as a result of a homeless situation and depression when people feel that there's no place else to turn, to remove those dark aspects that life can sometimes take them to and put them on a path to where they can be successful and move forward. And certainly we're not breaking ties the moment if they complete 24 months. We're not saying, time's up, we don't know you anymore. The relationships that'll build, hopefully there will be an ongoing relationship with each one of those folks. In fact, I'm sure there will be, that provides them an extended family.
One of the things that I see could be, and I suspect is, that you're not creating in them things that are foreign to them.
Correct.
But individually kind of unwrapping and unpackaging the gifts that God gave them in the first place.
No, it's a great.
To be able to see other possibilities and other things that maybe they didn't see before they went in the military.
Right.
But between that 6 and 12 months of nurturing to help them to become what God originally intended for them to be.
Yeah, I think nurturing is an outstanding way to explain that, because we were all nurtured at one aspect of our life. We didn't arrive to our ability to succeed in life by virtue of our own actions. It took a combination of people that were important parts of our lives that helped nurture us to reach those conclusions. And ultimately, understanding that we're a part of something bigger than ourselves, and that's where I think God's presence becomes clearer when you realize that there is not a sense of hopelessness, that you see the fact that there is community, which really was what God's intended in my life. There is nothing, no better example of a Christian walk, which is not necessarily what we're imposing here, but the bottom line is that we demonstrate and model community, faith, and hope that come from God's grace. This is an opportunity that these folks just aren't exposed to otherwise.
Amen. Amen. Well, Ed, we see Camp Nora, and I guess the picture I have from what Jeff told us is that of a bridge. A bridge that's real low on one side and kind of high on the other side. The banks on the other side of the river are a lot higher. Not as much chance for flooding and bad weather. We're going to get to a better place. But Jeff has said something about permanent situations. What after the 24 months, now what?
On what you just said, piggyback on that for a minute. When a young person joins the military, they have to learn how to transition from a civilian life to a military life. Transitioning from military to civilian life, it's the same concept of teaching them to take their skills they learned and to make it into a civilian aspect where they become self-supportive.
Okay.
As a veteran goes through Camp Nora, as long as they're showing progress, they're showing the ability to improve their life skills, their ability to adjust. We will work with them however long it takes. When they phase out of Camp Nora, it's because their social skills have been reestablished. Their life skills have been established. We have a lady that came on board with us that, just give you a little bit on her background, she is one of the only non-vets that work with us, but she's a Gold Star wife. That means her husband was killed in combat.
Yes.
Her belief is that she has received a certain guidance to join us and to put forth her abilities in honor of her husband, but on her own aspect. She has a degree in sociology. She's gone after her master's, and it's all because of the need of what we're trying to accomplish. The reason I went into that is as a veteran graduates out of Camp Nora, they're ready to establish a full-time employment, being able to support themselves in a residence. We're going to have a follow-up program where we will check with them every so often, see how they're doing. They're going to know that they have open communications with us, where they can come back for any additional assistance they may need. But one of the things we're also going to create is a Big Brother program within our project, where when a veteran phases out of Camp Nora, we want them to come back and work with the veterans that are coming into Camp Nora.
Ah, interesting.
The voice of experience.
Absolutely.
I'm a mentor with the Veterans Court program with Judge Childers here in St. Tammany Parish, and that's what we have. A mentorship program to help work with the younger vets, to give them the, I've been there, I got the experience. It's kind of like working with your children. Your children looks at you like, you know, you don't know what you're talking about. You know, you're just being mean or you're being over-disciplined.
I've said all those things. I've said all that.
You know, but I know my daughter, she just turned 40, and she'll come back to me and say, Daddy, now I know what you meant.
Yeah.
You know, when they start having kids of their own. Well, it's the same thing with a younger vet looking at an older vet. We want them to know that they can turn to the people who came through the program, who've succeeded in a program that's also there for additional guidance.
That's awesome.
It's a well-established fact. Veterans will only talk with veterans. And there is a lot of programs that's out there. God bless anybody who tries to help anyone in need. But you can't take a homeless veteran and put him in what I call a general population of homelessness in a program that's trying to help them, because a veteran will look at a civilian and basically think, you don't know what I went through. You can't understand why I'm here.
Mm-mm.
But when they sit down with another vet, then they'll start opening up because that person's been there. That person understands.
So Camp Nora really has a vision from day one. I can't hold a job. I have no place to live. I need shelter. I'm lost. I need help. All the way through giving back.
Yes, sir.
That's the vision is all. And that's where you are, aren't you?
Well, that's luckily enough, I met a lady that has been my rock, that's been my stability. She has supported me in this program from day one, and I couldn't be here where I'm at without her. That's what we want these veterans to feel. They may not have that family rock, that family stability, but they have someone in a brotherhood that can understand, that can, for lack of better words, take them by the hand and say, we fought through battles together. It might have been different conflicts. It might have been different locations around the United States, around the world, wherever it may be. But we've been there, and we've walked in each other's boots. So now let's walk together to get you to be where you need to be.
Truly, Nora. No yes. one rides alone. Now, of course, the big question, who pays for all this?
Great question. And that's where the challenge, a different challenge begins. Clearly, the program makes sense. Clearly, Ed's passion is clear. Clearly, there's a need to be met. What's probably not so clear is that these programs have proven successful. There's 35 different communities, entire states, Connecticut, Delaware, Virginia, that have successfully implemented these programs and have had great success. Again, though, when I say those states have implemented, that's a misnomer. They've been implemented by private citizens within those states who have reached out and provided the resources that are necessary. These things don't happen without financial demands. And really where my involvement became clear, or the need for my involvement became clear, is that Ed has all the tools to deliver on the program. My objective is to work with the private community, businesses, individuals, the Christian community, the veterans organizations, examples being like Elks Club, for example, who supports veterans, and of course the VFW that we all know about, and the different veterans organizations that exist, American Legion being another example. Those are all organizations that participate and support veterans to a degree, but there are substantial financial challenges here. You know, we have a facility that we need to take possession of. The cost of this facility is $635,000. It's a major commitment that needs to be made, and we're trying to pull together the resources to take down and own that facility outright. In the meantime, we have an opportunity to through the current owners of the property, to do so on a lease purchase basis, but our ultimate goal will be out-and-out ownership so that we don't have the ongoing rent obligation that's necessary. So obviously, that's a substantial amount of private funding that needs to take place. And going forward, once we're up and running, there are grant sources that we'll continue to pursue. We've submitted our first grant for a per diem grant that will provide sustenance for individual residents. It's a number roughly $1,400 a month for each veteran that is housed at the facility. That is a great resource, but again, even in that resource, with everybody, if we're housing up to the 18 that we can hold, we still have a substantial $15,000 to $20,000 a month in costs that are needed to properly run the facility at its top level. As we ramp up to that aspect, we're literally taking positions. There will be no paid positions. We have qualified volunteers who have the skill set necessary to perform the tasks. They're working on a non-compensated basis until we can reach the point that we can properly pay for a director and pay for the staffing that's necessary. So in the meantime, we're doing it on the basis of a lot of great people that are willing to and see the need and understand the need and are willing to give of themselves their time and energy. At some point, we want to reach the point where we have the necessary funding to properly staff the deserving staffing with people who are entitled for being paid for their time and energy in addition to just well-meaning folks. And so those will create challenges that we have to address. We feel like on a sustaining basis that we can probably get to that level sooner, and by that level being that $15,000 to $20,000 through sustaining gifts from people in the community, and we're starting that outreach to deliver that message. The bigger challenges are upfront capital goals of buying the facility. Hopefully, if we have to go into a lease purchase situation, then we'll need a $200,000 down payment, and then we'll move into roughly a $3,200 a month rent that we certainly could avoid if we could get a full funding upfront. And sure, we're seeking grant funding, but predominantly it's going to be, you know, private funding in large part will be our key to our success. And we know that veterans are oft talked about in the world that we live in today. People, I think, understand the need. We're looking to our local communities in Washington, St. Tammany Parish, and people in those communities to see and realize that they can minister to these folks in a very real and tangible way who are right around the corner from them. If successful, we'll reach out to every one of these community members and make sure they're aware of this opportunity to participate. And if so, the rightofthebrotherhood.org is our website that you can go make donations to. You can certainly reach out to Ed or myself directly, and we're more than happy to work with you directly to have you participate in any way that we can. And that's really where the lion's share of my effort is going to be over the next several months, to make sure that we can deliver on this necessary mission. And it's going to take a substantial involvement from our communities.
So we're not asking for money from the veterans to do this. This is not like a drug rehab program where it costs tens of thousands of dollars a month. For veterans, it's based on the success and blessings of other people who see the need, who are contributors. And that's what we're talking about today, is looking for people who can write the check.
No, that's correct. And I think the important part of that is that so many of us who have been blessed with some financial resources, in large case not due to our own doing, but just by our own circumstances, we look and when we identify opportunities, we try to find opportunities to make a difference in our community and our world in general. I think oftentimes we tend to look past our local communities and don't fully understand that there is need right outside our door. And I think we have some people here, lots of people, that understand that and get that. Our key is to try to, through conversations like we're having today, get the message out to say, folks, you can make a difference here. I'll say one thing that on behalf of Ed, and he spoke of his wife who's worked so closely by his side, these folks have been at this for a long time and have not taken a dime out of any proceeds for their own benefit. And it's remarkable to me the personal sacrifices they've made, both financially and with time, treasure, and talent. We need to support those efforts, and ultimately won't succeed until we're able to start ministering to those individual veterans. And that opportunity is here. You don't have to look far. I mean, I know personally finding a situation that's here locally where I can see the benefits, I can see the property where it's going on, I could probably even meet the veterans at some point. That's very real and very tangible, and we look forward to sharing those victories one at a time, and we hope and are sure that people will reach into their hearts and find this is an opportunity to minister locally. It's right here, and it's now, and it's needed.
It reminds me of the parable of the talents, where the question is asked by the Lord, what did you do with the gifts that I've given you? What did you do with the responsibilities that you had? And sounds like Camp Nora, sounds like Jeff, Ed, sounds like the things that the Lord has placed on your heart are certainly a worthwhile investment in people.
Absolutely, and amen to that. I mean, I couldn't put it anywhere near as nicely as you just did, but I think that's truly the case. We've been given those gifts, and we do have, and I look forward to the opportunity to be able to answer much better than I have up to this point that same challenge when I meet God in the next chapter of my life.
And also some benefactors who would like to be a part of it in the short term.
Amen.
Amen. How can people give us the contact information again, please?
Yes. Again, if you want to get involved, therightofthebrotherhood.org is the website. You can get information there and get good follow-up. Also, you can reach out to Ed Lewis directly, and Ed can be reached at 504-234-0778, or Ed can be emailed at rotb2015@yahoo.com. Myself, Jeff Marshall, at jeffandjill@reagan.com, the former president, and not too coincidentally, and or at my phone at 985-246-9341. That phone's with me all the time. We look forward to communications. We have built a pretty good organization to be responsive, but if you reach out to us first, we will definitely get you plugged into the right people that can help you find a way to be a part of this, and we look forward to every one of those calls and emails.
Great. Well, it's been a blessing to talk to both of you gentlemen today. Ed, do you have something you want to add?
A little bit more on the non-financial side. We are asking for contributions, men's clothing, non-perishables, hygiene items. If anyone is interested and would like to make donations in those areas, please give me a call. Or they can bring them personally out to Camp Noor, which is located at 80431 Ogden Road in Covington, Louisiana, which is off of Lee Road. If you do this, I'd be more than happy to take you through the property, let you see what we're doing, let you see the structure we have, the beautiful 17 acres with a 2.5-acre pond, the atmosphere that we can offer to the veterans, and it'll give you a little bit more peace of mind of the idea of what we're doing.
Amen. You guys have certainly painted the picture. I think we understand what the need is, and we'll just depend on the Lord now to speak to people's hearts, to raise up those that are able to do everything from write a check to bring some of those non-perishables you talked about. So thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you.
And thank you, Slidell, for tuning in to Voices here on Grace Radio. We want to hear from you. You can call us at 985-250-1037. Send us a text. Leave us a comment. If Jeff or Ed said something today that piqued your interest, be in touch. We'd love to put you in touch with them. We'd encourage you to like us on Facebook, Grace Radio of Slidell. You can also check out on our website, www.graceradioslidell.net. There you can make tax-deductible donations to support this station. And again, the number to call is 985-250-1037. Well, that's it for now. Join us again daily for Voice of Slidell at 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. and get the flow of God's grace here in Slidell.